many instances of frogs that were seen to fall from the sky. Notes and Queries, 8-6-104, Accounts of such falls, signed by witnesses. Notes and Queries, 8-6-190. Scientific American, July 12, 1873. A shower of frogs which darkened the air and covered the ground for a long distance is the reported result of a recent rainstorm at Kansas City, MO. As to having been there in the first place. Little frogs found in London, after a heavy storm, July 30, 1838. Notes and Queries, 8-7-437. Little toads found in a desert, after a rainfall, Notes and Queries. 8-8-493. To start with, I do not deny positively the conventional explanation of up and down. I think that there may have been such occurrences. I omit many notes that I have upon indistinguishables. In the London Times, July 4, 1883, there is an account of a shower of twigs and leaves and tiny toads in a storm upon the slopes of the Apennines. These may have been the ejectamenta of a whirlwind. I add, however, that I have notes upon two other falls of tiny toads, in 1883, one in France and one in Tahiti, also of fish in Scotland. But in the phenomenon of the Apennines, the mixture seems to me to be typical of the products of a whirlwind. The other instances seem to me to be typical of something like migration. Their great numbers and their homogeneity. Over and over in these annals of the damned occurs the datum of segregation. But a whirlwind is thought of as a condition of chaos quasi-chaos, not final negativeness, of course. Monthly Weather Review, July, 1881. A small pond in the track of the cloud was sucked dry, the water being carried over the adjoining fields together with a large quantity of soft mud, which was scattered over the ground for half a mile around. It is so easy to say that small frogs that have fallen from the sky had been scooped up by a whirlwind, but here are the circumstances of a scoop. In the exclusionist imagination there is no regard for mud, debris from the bottom of a pond, floating vegetation, loose things from the shores, but a precise picking out of frogs only. Of all instances I have that attribute the fall of small frogs or toads to whirlwinds, only one definitely identifies or places the whirlwind. Also, as has been said before, a pond going up would be quite as interesting as frogs coming down. Whirlwinds we read of over and over, but where and what whirlwind? It seems to me that anybody who had lost a pond would be heard from. In Simon's Meteorological Magazine, 32-106, A Fall of Small Frogs, near Birmingham, England, June 30, 1892, is attributed to a specific whirlwind, but not a word as to any special pond that had contributed. And something that strikes my attention here is that these frogs are described as almost white. I'm afraid there is no escape for us. We shall have to give to civilization upon this earth some new worlds. Places with white frogs in them. Upon several occasions we have had data of unknown things that have fallen from somewhere. But something not to be overlooked is that if living things have landed alive upon this earth in spite of all we think we know of the accelerated velocity of falling bodies and have propagated, why the exotic becomes the indigenous, or from the strangest of places we'd expect the familiar. Or if hosts of living frogs have come here from somewhere else, every living thing upon this earth may, ancestrally, have come from somewhere else. I find that I have another note upon a specific hurricane. Annals and Mag of Nat. History, 1-3-185. After one of the greatest hurricanes in the history of Ireland, some fish were found as far as 15 yards from the edge of a lake. Have another. This is a good one for the exclusionists. Fall of fish in Paris, said that a neighboring pond had been blown dry. Living age, 52-186. Date not given, but I have seen it recorded somewhere else. The best known fall of fishes from the sky is that which occurred at Mountain Ash, in the valley of Abedar, Glamorganshire, February 11, 1859. The editor of the Zoologist, 2-677, having published a report of a fall of fishes, writes, "I am continually receiving similar accounts of frogs and fishes. But, in all the volumes of the zoologist, I can find only two reports of such falls. There is nothing to conclude other than that hosts of data have been lost because orthodoxy does not look favorably upon such reports. The Monthly Weather Review records several falls of fishes in the United States, but accounts of these reported occurrences are not findable in other American publications. Nevertheless, the treatment by the zoologist of the fall reported from Mountain Ash is fair. First appears, in the issue of 1859-6493, a letter from the Rev. John Griffith, vicar of Abidar, asserting that the fall had occurred, chiefly upon the property of Mr. Nixon, of Mountain Ash. Upon page 6540, Dr. Gray, of the British Museum, bristling with exclusionism, writes that some of these fishes, which had been sent to him alive, were very young minnows. He says, on reading the evidence, "It seems to me most probably only a practical joke, that one of Mr. Nixon's employees had thrown a pailful of water upon another, who had thought fish in it had fallen from the sky had dipped up a pailful from a brook. Those fishes still alive were exhibited at the Zoological Gardens, Regent's Park. The editor says that one was a minnow and that the rest were sticklebacks. He says that Dr. Gray's explanation is no doubt right. But, upon page 6564, he publishes a letter from another correspondent, who apologizes for opposing so high an authority as Dr. Gray, but says that he had obtained some of these fishes from persons who lived at a considerable distance apart, or considerably out of range of the playful pail of water. According to the Annual Register, 1859-14, the fishes themselves had fallen by pailfuls. If these fishes were not upon the ground in the first place, we base our objections to the whirlwind explanation upon two data. That they fell in no such distribution as one could attribute to the discharge of a whirlwind, but upon a narrow strip of land, about 80 yards long and 12 yards wide. The other datum is again the suggestion that at first seemed so incredible, but for which support is piling up, a suggestion of a stationary source overhead. That 10 minutes later another fall of fishes occurred upon this same narrow strip of land. Even arguing that a whirlwind may stand still axially, it discharges tangentially. Wherever the fishes came from, it does not seem thinkable that some could have fallen and that others could have whirled even a tenth of a minute, then falling directly after the first to fall. Because of these evil circumstances, the best adaptation was to laugh the whole thing off and say that someone had soused someone else with a pailful of water in which a few very young minnows had been caught up. In the London Times, March 2, 1859, is a letter from Mr. Aaron Roberts, curate of St. Peter's, Carmathon. In this letter the fishes are said to have been about 4 inches long, but there is some question of species. I think, myself, that they were minnows and sticklebacks. Some persons, thinking them to be sea fishes, placed them in salt water, according to Mr. Roberts. The effect is stated to have been almost instantaneous death. Some were placed in fresh water. These seemed to thrive well. As to narrow distribution, we are told that the fishes fell in and about the premises of Mr. Nixon. It was not observed at the time that any fish fell in any other part of the neighborhood, save in the particular spot mentioned. In the London Times, March 10, 1859, Vicar Griffith writes an account. The roofs of some houses were covered with them. In this letter it is said that the largest fishes were 5 inches long, and that these did not survive the fall. Report of the British Association, 1859-158. The evidence of the fall of fish on this occasion was very conclusive. A specimen of the fish was exhibited and was found to be the Gasterosteus lyris. Gasterosteus is the stickleback. Altogether, I think we have not a sense of total perdition, when we're damned with the explanation that someone soused someone else with a pailful of water in which were thousands of fishes 4 or 5 inches long, some of which covered roofs of houses, and some of which remained 10 minutes in the air. By way of contrast, we offer our own acceptance. That the bottom of a supergeographical pond had dropped out. I have a great many notes upon the fall of fishes, despite the difficulty these records have in getting themselves published, but I pick out the instances that especially relate to our supergeographical acceptances, or to the principles of supergeography, or data of things that have been in the air longer than acceptably could a whirlwind carry them, that have fallen with a distribution narrower than is attributable to a whirlwind, that have fallen for a considerable length of time upon the same narrow area of land. These three factors indicate, somewhere not far aloft, a region of inertness to this Earth's gravitation, of course, however, a region that, by the flux and variation of all things, must at times be susceptible but, afterward, our heresy will bifurcate. In amiable accommodation to the crucifixion it'll get, I think. But so impressed are we with the datum that, though there have been many reports of small frogs that have fallen from the sky, not one report upon a fall of tadpoles is findable, that to these circumstances another adjustment must be made. Apart from our three factors of indication, an extraordinary observation is the fall of living things without injury to them. The devotees of St. Isaac explain that they fall upon thick grass and so survive, but Sir James Emerson Tennant, in his History of Ceylon, tells of a fall of fishes upon gravel, by which they were seemingly uninjured. Something else apart from our three main interests is a phenomenon that looks like what one might call an alternating series of falls of fishes, whatever the significance may be.